Well, 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 look what we have here. It's you. You're back. You returned for more of whatever this is and whatever it means to you. Well, we have lots of things to talk about this week on the episode. I will not keep you in suspense any longer. Let's just jump straight into it. Like jumping into a swimming pool. Except I can't do that because I can't swim. But like, imagine if I could. Let's just pretend I can. ...5:30, at the mercy of approaching sunlight and the angry, unwelcome alarm. I am happy, held in heaven, an anxious angel, counting seconds, sequences, silences, and small noises, moving at the command of your rising and falling chest. I dance to your breath, subdued but lively, resting and restless, holding on with fevered fingertips to every second of waking up with you. Our mornings are righteous. We are on the right side of the bed. I join your tattoos, touching each part of your arms that I can reach, with closed, cautious eyes, pretending a little longer that I am softly sleeping in high, holy, happy heaven. You are sound asleep sometimes in every respect, not seeing the magic you make or the way you have haunted me my whole life, an out of reach illusion that my mornings were missing. Sometimes you are not a mortal. You are a sparkling soul sleeping all around me, seeping inside my mind, my nerves, my veins, and a million medical terms I cannot name, and I am changed. I wake up, renewed, clean and pure, tested but true, waking up at last with you in high, holy, happy heaven. I was actually not aiming for that when I was writing it. I wanted to write something about angels. I was just thinking about them, you know. I was like, oh, those iconic, amazing, glittery beings, you know. And then I was thinking about, like, the concept of heaven and what it meant for me. And then I was like, you know what? That bit when you just wake up and you're kind of, like, not super, like, there, if that makes sense. Like, it's not like you're in like another dimension or anything, but it's this kind of really ethereal experience, you know? And I was kind of imagining having that experience with someone you love and how something so simple can feel so beautiful and so important. And like this kind of angelic energy. And so I kind of took like this kind of really kind of religious imagery, and I applied it to that kind of real life scenario. I was really tired when I wrote it as well, and I was kind of thinking, oh, I just want to be back in bed. I just want to, like, because it was that kind of post New Year moment, and I was like, I don't want to have to go back to having responsibilities and shit. I want to just be in bed asleep, or maybe kind of in that moment where you just wake up. And I was just kind of thinking, let me just write about it, and that will hopefully quieten my obnoxious urges to be snoozy and sleepy. It didn't, actually. I still, you know, even after, I still really wanted to be, like, at home, all cozy and comfy. But, I mean, it was still really fun to work on, though, and I had a good time. honestly, I feel like if I could do every aspect of my work from my bed, I probably would. I can do most of it. But sometimes I do actually have to get up, which is really, really unfortunate. It's obvious, but you keep your eyes shut, yelling into the mirror, dressed in your own disdain, asking me again and again why I choose trouble every time, cracking your reflection, feeling 7 years and 7 months when I say that it's a bad habit that you handed me. You know that thing where somebody projects at you and they will find faults in you and exaggerate them because deep down they know that that's the kind of behavior they exhibit, but they don't want to, like, admit or be honest about it. Like, it's very that, you know. I know a lot of people like that. But I just had this image in my head of someone, like, arguing with the mirror. But they see it as, like, a different person. They get mad about all these things. But really, they're mad at themselves. They're just not ready to accept that yet. And I was kind of fascinated with that as an idea, so I kind of built on it a little. Are you looking for a platform where you can have your voice heard? Find your home and find your voice on Rumble, the brand new video platform where you can share your thoughts, express your passions, and find like-minded people and creators. Download Rumble from the App Store or visit rumble.me to find out more. What the actual fuck is going on with this whole politics business?
Well, everyone really needs to stand up and say that, okay, no, this is not politics in the normal British way. This is something darker and bleaker, and it's got to stop.
Peace is possible and must be achieved.
We want Scotland to remain inside the EU, and we want the UK to remain inside the EU.
Labour is weak and divided.
Well, stuff has actually happened this week in quite a major way. So, after I recorded last week, some stuff happened in regards to peerages. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't give a shit about peerages. I think it's a stupid system, personally. Because a lot of the time it goes to undeserving people or just people who've sucked up to the right people, and I think it's kind of dumb, but some people give a shit. Ian Duncan Smith has been given one, and people are very upset. There's been, you know, petitions going around to have him stripped of it and things like that, because obviously he is not a very pleasant man and he has not done great things for the UK, so I feel it's justified to be angry about it, but realistically I don't think that it's going to be changed. I don't think it's going to be any different. He's still going to get it because, you know, We're in the timeline where the bad guys win, so sorry. People are upset because John Bercow didn't get one for being Speaker, and it's sort of tradition for the Speaker to get one. And he didn't because, I don't know, the government decided they didn't want to. Some people are speculating it's pettiness because they're mad at him for not siding with them over Brexit because he was being impartial and he wasn't just sort of immediately siding with the government. I think that's possible, but I mean, realistically, John Bercow is going to be set for life, so does it really matter? Like, in the grand scheme of things, I think he'll be fine. But yeah, that happened. And I'm going to be real with you, I don't really give a shit, so I'm going to move on. Labour leadership thing is continuing. Jeremy Corbyn is kind of still, he's still the leader of the party, but in the sense that, like, he's like the supply teacher that no one really respects, but they just sort of have to let him get on with it. Do you know what I mean? He did a New Year's message and people were not happy because he keeps pushing this message of Labour is the resistance now, and everyone's just sort of like, yeah, but look at what it could have been. You know what I mean? I think people are upset that he's still kind of pushing this, you know, it wasn't our fault, we're the resistance, the public just didn't understand what we were trying to do for them thing, and he's not willing to let go of the dream, and I think people are mad about it, and I think that's fair. But in terms of finding his successor and Tom Watson's for leader and deputy leader respectively, there have been some developments. Clive Lewis is still running for leader, even though he outed himself as a creep. He's still proceeding, which, I mean, of course he is. You know, he, you know, basically gave a ton of reasons why he shouldn't be in a position of power, but he still thinks he's qualified. Speaking of people who are blatantly not qualified for leadership, but are still keeping on because, well, fuck knows. Richard Burgin has announced he wants to be deputy leader, and that's very cute. This is the guy who went on a debate completely unprepared during the election campaign, made a fool of himself, became a viral meme after the leader of Plaid Cymru basically made a fool of him on live television, and yet he's still like, yeah, I got this, lads. I'm ready for the next big step. And I'm like, girl, I wouldn't even trust you to run for a bus, let alone to run for any kind of leadership role. Like, the arrogance of it. Like, I just, honestly, sometimes I think Labour gets what it deserves for sticking with this delusional nonsense. Anyway. It's just, I can't believe it. It's ridiculousness. By the time you hear this, Jess Phillips probably will have announced in a concrete way that she's running, because apparently she's got the numbers, she's got the support from MPs, so she's doing it. So journalists are all talking about how that's going to be announced tonight. I'm recording this part on Friday, so you should have heard in a meaningful way by Friday evening. There was a poll done from Labour members, and it suggests that Keir Starmer is the favourite. So I guess they're not interested in a woman then, even though they all keep saying that they want one. Secretly, when they don't have to openly say it, they really want a man. Like, whatever, Labour, okay. I don't mind Keir Starmer. I think he has that kind of authority. he's a good talker. He'd probably fare well in, you know, debates and things, which is why it's even more bizarre that he wasn't sent for any during the election. But Richard fucking Burgeon and Rebecca Long Bailey were. I think he'd be fine. But I don't know. If that's who they want, fine. It's whatever. But I think it's going to take more than just changing the leader to fix Labour. So it depends on whether he's really committed to cleaning up the party membership for a start. You know, and making sure that they have not just policies that resonate with the public, but that they have a strategy for selling those policies in a way that is not overwhelming, confusing, alienating. So if he's their choice, he has a lot of work to do. So Labour are doing a whole bunch of shit. Ian Lavery has decided he wants to give it a go and be the leader of the party. And there's quite a lot of the left wing of the Labour Party that are into that. Again, like I said, maybe Labour gets what it deserves, because fucking hell. He is currently the chairman of the Labour Party. He denies that they did anything wrong in the election campaign and it was all Brexit. But then again, you know, he also denied any wrongdoing when he received thousands of pounds from a union to pay for his house. And I mean, well. So, I mean, they can pick him if they want, you know, decades more of Tory rule. And sometimes I think actually maybe that's what the Labour Party does want. Because, you know, their actions kind of make it seem like they don't actually want to be in power. They just want to be yelling at the government. And I mean, that's not useful in any capacity. It's not useful for the opposition, because when you're in the opposition, not only do you need to yell at the government and oppose what they do, but you also need to have credible plans, like things that you could do instead. And I don't think Labour are very interested in that as a concept, which is annoying. Because it's like, we don't have time for you guys to fuck about, like, get it together. But, you know, I just, anyway. Emily Thornberry's still going ahead with running. She says, if polling suggests preceding an election that people would not want her to be Prime Minister, she would step down and trigger another leadership contest so somebody else can be chosen, which I feel is kind of shade at Jeremy Corbyn, because for quite a while, the polling was showing that people didn't want Jeremy Corbyn to be Prime Minister, and he was just like, whatever, I do what I want. So I think that's a good pledge to make, but again, it's not just about that. Like, we need to know really from every candidate what their concrete plans are for dealing with some of the very obvious issues in the party membership. Realistically planning for the next election, and, you know, whether they actually plan to fucking win or not, because frankly I don't know at this point with the Labour Party. I mean, everyone laughed at Jo Swinson for saying she was going to be Prime Minister, including me, but at least she seemed to want it, you know. At least she seemed to be, you know, solidly planning for if she was Prime Minister. Maybe that was a bit delusional, because she is the leader of the Liberal... Well, she was the leader of the Liberal Democrats. But at least she seemed like she was actually willing to give it a go. And that's the kind of energy we need to see from the Labour Party, because under our current electoral system, they have the better chance. So let's see some enthusiasm, ladies. And also men who, you know, are still running, despite also being the guys who were like, we need to have women leading the party. We need women in positions of power. But, you know, we're going to run anyway. Dawn Butler and Angela Rayner seem to also be going for deputy leader. I think both of them would be good choices. I actually wouldn't mind both of them running for the leadership, but if deputy is what they feel they want to do, good for them. Either of them would be better choices than Richard Burgeon, obviously. So yeah, I think I've covered everything from the hellscape that is the Labour Party this week. I did just mention the Lib Dems, and they're relevant for another reason. Lib Dem MP Leila Moran has come out as pansexual, and that's great news for her. I'm happy for her. I hope that she is very happy in her relationship. I wish her all the best. However, it is mentioned in almost every bit of coverage of this that the only reason she has opened up about this in public is because journalists came to her and said that they were going to write stories about her relationship. And I don't think that's acceptable. I really don't. Her relationship and her sexuality are her business. And the fact that she was essentially forced to talk about it, perhaps before she was ready, because some journalists wanted to talk about it, is not acceptable to me. She should have been able to talk about it in her own time, when she was ready, on her own terms. If she never wanted to talk about it, that's her right. Nobody is owed information about someone's relationships and someone's sexuality. And she has essentially been forced to talk about this because journalists were saying, well, we're going to talk about it. So if you want to talk about it first, great, but we're proceeding regardless. And that's fucked up. She deserves to have all the time she needs to, you know, to come to terms with it, to enjoy being in this relationship and finding out who she is, and for her to essentially be rushed into it because otherwise she was basically going to be outed by the press anyway. For that to still be happening at this time is just so unbelievably fucked up. So I'm really happy for her that she is happy and she's found someone that she cares about, and she's discovered who she is and she's happy with that, and that's great, and I'm really happy for her. But the way that this has come about, it troubles me, because this is something that happens repeatedly to LGBT people, especially public figures. People will be essentially forced out, sometimes before they're ready. There was a whistleblower who spoke out about one of the Leave campaigns a couple of years ago, and was then essentially outed by a member of the government staff, and they used a government platform to do it, and he hadn't even had a chance to speak to his family and talk to them about who he, you know, his identity and who he was. And he was outed in public, essentially using government resources to do it. And he hadn't even he hadn't even spoken to his family. And it should have been his choice. It should have been his decision. And that was taken away from him. And there was no consequences for it as well. And the same thing has essentially happened here. It should have been her choice when she spoke about it. And that choice has been taken from her. Because she was put in a position of, you tell them or we will. And for what? You know? Why does the public deserve to know? You know? It's very sad. I'm happy for her, and I hope that she will continue to be happy in her relationship. But I'm very sad that this happened to her. It's not fair, and it's just really sad that this still happens. But I wish her the best, and I hope that she's in a really good place. And welcome to the clubhouse, sis. So that's Lib Dem news this week. The Lib Dems haven't really been up to anything, bless them. I mean, are the Lib Dems ever really up to anything? Not really, no. Boris Johnson. God, how could I forget Boris Johnson? I mean, I try, but what can I do? Boris Johnson used his New Year's message to tell Remainers he will be the Prime Minister for everyone and that we have lots of opportunities and basically we should all be friends. And I mean, no. I talked about this before, but there's this sort of prevailing insistence that everyone has to come together. Right, left and right wing, Remainer and Leaver, Labour and Tory, all four countries of the Union. You know, everyone has to come together because Boris says so, and all of Boris's mates say so as well. But they are not making any effort to create unity. They are basically saying, we have to come together. But they're not telling us why. They're not telling us what we get out of it. They're not... Do you know what I mean? It's like, if you want unity, if you want people to come together, firstly, you should accept that you have essentially spent, like, the last several years pissing off the people that you now want to come and be friends with you. It's some of the people they're trying to call out to even longer, but you're still telling them, come and be friends, come and be with me. You're not offering them anything. You're not saying, okay, we're going to compromise the concerns you have, we're going to listen and we're going to see what we can work out. That's not what Boris Johnson is saying. He has no interest in talking to Remainers about their concerns. He has no interest in talking to people on the left about their concerns about, you know, his policies and his actions. He has no intention of, for example, talking to the devolved governments across the Union about their concerns about how things like his hard Brexit plans and his policies are going to affect their country. He has no interest in talking to any of those people and reaching a compromise, but he's still saying, come and be friends. I'm everyone's prime minister. I'm the people's prime minister. Let's be friends. And it's like, fuck off. Like, I get it. Boris Johnson is somebody that has a deep desire to be liked. He clearly wants to be popular. It haunts him that people don't like him. It gets to him because he is clearly somebody who has felt very liked throughout his life. Now, it may be the case that actually people didn't like him and that they were just pretending because he's rich and has influence. That's actually probably the case because he seems like a thoroughly unpleasant person. So when he's out in the real world and he's meeting people that are open about the fact that they don't like him, he's meeting members of the public who will tell him to fuck off. He is, you know, being interviewed by journalists who will call him out on his shit. He is meeting with other politicians from other parties who will say to him, you need to do this or I'm not talking to you. You know, he can't stand it. He needs so deeply to be liked by everyone he meets, and it eats him up inside that he's not getting that. He's not getting that constant approval and validation, because behind all of the nonsense that his PR team are throwing up about how he's so intelligent and so amazing and such a great thinker and he's so brave and he's so amazing, he is a scared, spoiled little boy. And he cannot fucking stand that people hate him. Yes, some people might have voted for him, but even some of them don't fucking like him. Like, you know, there are people that have said openly, I voted Conservative, but it was just because I wanted Brexit. I don't like Boris Johnson, but I wanted this thing that he was going to give me. And I think that fucks with him too. And so I think that's why he keeps pushing this whole, everyone has to be my friend, everyone has to like me, we all have to come together. Because it's not about bringing the UK together, it's about him. Because if it was about bringing the UK together and strengthening the union or whatever the fuck it is he wants to do, he would actually make some effort to do those things. He would be reaching out to devolved governments and saying, okay, what can we do to make your position better so that you want to stay? How can we compromise with you? If he actually did want to create a situation where Remainers and Leavers could get along, he would be reaching out instead of spending all his time calling us doubters and doomsters or whatever. He would reach out and say, okay, what can I do? Now, it may be the case that there's nothing he can do, but if he actually cared about this, he would at least try. But he doesn't. He doesn't care about unity. What he actually cares about is that people praise him and tell him how fantastic and wonderful he is, because he genuinely is only just realizing what it's like for people to be honest with him about what they think. Because for most of his life, he has been told he is fantastic, he is amazing, he is everybody's favorite person, and people are only just being honest with him, and he can't take it. And that's sad, really. I would feel bad for him if he wasn't such a horrid bastard. So yeah, Boris wants everyone to be his friend, but he's making no effort to make friends, and that's sad. And Dominic Cummings, the fucking weirdo sort of guy, he worked for one of the Leave campaigns and he's now kind of Boris's guy. He's decided he wants to fuck around with the civil service. He put out this job ad that was super fucking weird, saying about how people that worked for him would have to basically give all their time to him and all this nonsense shit. And everyone made fun of it on social media, but I mean, he's probably being serious and he really thinks that he's important enough in the world that he should be able to command that much loyalty. And that says a lot about him as far as I'm concerned. He just... Boris Johnson really surrounds himself with, like, the worst kind of people. Rail fares have gone up, and so have bus fares, which I think we all expected, but as usual, the service has gotten worse. And the public are really kind of kicking back about this, because what the fuck, you know? I think it's... It feels unacceptable every year, but this year, I think, because of how bad public transport is currently, people are just really fucked off about it, which is fair enough. especially in the north of the country, there are rumours that Northern Rail could finally be facing consequences for how shit their service has been since forever, really. Whether that actually happens, I don't know. I would not trust the Transport Secretary as far as he could get on a Northern Rail train, which is probably not very far because it'll probably be fucking cancelled. I don't live in the north, as you know. But I have used Northern Rail quite a lot when I go up there on my holidays. And let me tell you this, it's a fucking mess. Okay, the staff are trying their best, but they clearly have not been given a lot to work with. And I genuinely do not understand how people in the north who have to use it every day have retained their sanity. I do not know. They must have the patience of a fucking saint because Jesus Christ. And the fact that their fares have gone up again, it's just batshit. And for what? Some of their trains are still old buses from like the 80s. Like, what are they paying for? It's just... Oy vey. Anyway, so Northern might be stripped of its franchise. We don't really know. It's still a bit up in the air because, I mean, the Transport Secretary has said, oh, he's going to take action. He's not been resting on his laurels over this. But there is still the possibility that essentially the contract might be given back to Northern just with like additional conditions and things like that. So I think people are trying not to get too excited. It would be the right thing to do to strip them of the franchise for sure. But I mean, we all know what the government's like, don't we? So we'll see. Night falls, and the hands of time are tornadoes, ticking and trawling on, round and round, reliving our frequent fights, silently saying sorry, counting the things we have in common, creeping around each other, silent, somber snakes, nightmares in the daylight, only dreaming when it gets dark. Zombies is one of the most like overdone things in the horror genre, and if you've seen as many horror films as I have, that is a quite obvious problem, because everyone wants to do zombies because it's pretty cheap in the grand scheme of things to do a zombie film. It's easy to write the story because it's essentially the same story. It's just you've got your protagonist, or maybe you've got a group of protagonists, and there's an infection, there's an outbreak, and then you chronicle how they figure out a way to get to a rescue point or whatever. So it basically writes itself. But I saw a very good zombie film recently. It was called Death Do Us Part. And I think the reason why it was a good zombie film was because arguably, yes, it did follow the standard zombie structure, but it also had a very human side to it. It sort of looked at, you know, the breakdown of a marriage, and kind of trying to figure out your own life when everything is going to shit. And so when I wrote that, I was kind of thinking about that film, And also about the way the world currently is. Because a lot of the time it feels like the world is this out of control thing that's happening in the background. And then you've also got all your own shit in the foreground that you've got to try and sort out. But everything from the background keeps getting closer. And you're like, what the fuck? What the fuck? And, you know, trying to figure out your own life and where you're going and what you're doing. Trying to maintain relationships, trying to meet all the needs that you have as a human while there's chaos everywhere around you is something that I think we can all get at this point. Like, we feel that it's happening. And so I kind of wanted to write a little bit about that. You know, and how hard it can be when all you have is one other person and you're together and you're all the other person has and they're all you have. But you don't know if you really have them anymore. I'm recording this on Friday, so things could develop further from then, I don't know. If you've been on social media, you will be aware. World War III was trending pretty much all day. It still is as of 4 p.m. when I'm recording this. And that is due to escalation of tensions between the United States of America and Iran. And so people are now pretty sure that this will escalate to a war between the United States of America and Iran, due to an assassination by the United States of one of Iran's key figures. I want to point out, I do have an interest in politics. I have always been interested. However, I know about what I know about. And I've never professed to know about things I don't know about. My main interests, and the things I talk about, I have a little Twitter account where I talk about politics. I know I've mentioned that before. And the things I know about and talk about, public transport in rural areas, the politics of my local area in Kent where I live, feminism. I'm very interested in politics in Scotland and Wales. I've been interested in that for a long time, researching, learning about it. You know, those are the main things that I talk about. I don't often talk about politics in the Middle East, not because I don't care about it, but because I'm still learning and I don't know enough to talk about it in a significant way. I have been learning. I listen to quite a few podcasts that discuss it and they discuss recent developments in depth. Sort of situations, and they do, you know, it's good for learning and that's helpful. I've been reading about it a lot and trying to increase my knowledge on that, but I am not currently at a point where I would be comfortable describing myself as knowledgeable, and I don't think there's any shame in that, I might add. because, you know, it's not something that I was taught at school, and it's not something that has been super easy to access over the years. It has become easier, and there have been more resources that will help you if you want to learn, but it can be a challenge to figure everything out, and I don't think there's any shame in that. You know, I wouldn't expect people from the Middle East to be super experts on British politics, for example. I wouldn't expect people in the United States to be experts on British politics. I would expect at least some surface knowledge if they claimed that they were, and they claimed that they were knowledgeable. But, you know, if they're open about it and they say, I'm learning, or I don't know much about it, I think that's fair enough. So anyway, this is happening. It's a developing situation between the US and Iran. So I had been aware of it, and I had been reading up on it throughout the day, but I don't know enough to, you know, make some big sweeping statement, because a lot of what I would say would not be useful or valuable, because I don't know enough. So I was continuing to talk about the things that I do know about. And one of the things that I discussed, there was a journalist, a political journalist, who was talking about how people shouldn't call Boris Johnson Boris. I think that's a fair point. But he, in making his point, he was saying how people wouldn't do that to the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, or the Welsh First Minister. But in referring to the Welsh First Minister, he said, whoever runs Wales. For those that don't know, it's Mark Drakeford. And I just found it so weird. It's like a guy who was the chair of London's Young Labour group, who has covered politics before, doesn't know who the Welsh Labour First Minister is, and he's sitting there giving advice to other... Okay. All right. So I talked about it a little. And then somebody replied, and it wasn't the journalist, which I would have expected. Maybe he would come back at me with a bit of, you know, of a hot take of his own or something, which, you know, fair enough. I said what I said on a public platform. If he wants to come back at me, fine. But it was some other guy. And he was basically like, World War III is kicking off and this is what we're upset about. You know, like, he was upset with me for talking about this. And I was like, I mean, that might be the case. It might be about to kick off. But what is my Twitter feed going to do to stop that? You know what I mean? I mean, it reminded me of the Iraq War, right? I was a kid then, and I really did not like the idea of the Iraq War happening. I was not into it. I was still very much in the beginning stages of learning about politics at that point. I grew up in a very political family of Labour voters and Labour members, and so we, you know, I knew that there was a war happening in Iraq and that the UK was involved, and it would be bad. I remember going on the march in London against the Iraq War. That was one of my first major political memories. I remember writing a letter to Tony Blair and sending it off, which is just peak me, really. But beyond that, there was nothing I could do. I continued going to school. I continued trying to learn what I could, which was not easy for a kid in primary school, but I tried. But beyond that, there was nothing I could do. I didn't know as much at the time, obviously, about how these things play out typically. So I had this overwhelming anxiety of, you know, things are never going to be the same. I might die. Someone I know might die. What's going to happen? Obviously now that I, you know, have lived in the UK through something like that, I am very much aware that I am probably not in any danger, really. Things will never be the same, but not in a way that affects me. And looking back, I feel a little, you know, kind of embarrassed by how kind of self-absorbed I was and how I was making it about me. But to be fair, I was a kid, you know, and I didn't know all that much about it. So that's not really a surprise that as a child, my first thought was, what if something happens to me? What if something happens to where I live and people I know? Obviously, I was concerned about the people in Iraq too, but my first thought was myself, because I was a child and I did not know what it was going to be like. So that brings us back to now. And I am not in any way qualified to speak at length about what could potentially happen in Iran, or what the US's next move will be, or what Iran's next move will be. I don't know if the UK will become involved in this in a major way. At current, we're not. Not really. So, what would be the use, especially with the viral nature of social media, what would be the use in me throwing out something that could be incorrect, that could be scaremongering, that could be self-absorbed, centering this entire thing on myself rather than the people that are more likely to be affected in Iran? What's the point in that beyond getting me some likes, retweets, and attention? I have seen people on social media in the UK who have been making it about themselves and how worried they are for their safety. And I have seen people making it about how they're so scared that they're gonna have to go and fight in a war that we don't even know the UK will be involved in. I've seen people throwing out things that even I, with my limited knowledge on the situation and on, you know, in the, and my knowledge on the Middle East, even I know that the things they're throwing out are incorrect or inaccurate. But they don't care because it gets them attention and Twitter engagement and validation, and they get to pretend for 5 minutes that they're a foreign policy expert. And I think that's irresponsible. You know, so I'm very much following the, well, to paraphrase, you know, if you don't have anything intelligent to say, shut up. You know, amplify the voices of people that do know what they're talking about. But if you don't know what you're talking about, or you're not sure, don't potentially spread misinformation. And don't make it about yourself when right now it doesn't even involve you. You know, currently, the way it stands right now, as I record this on Friday, this could have changed by the time it says on Sunday, I don't know. The UK is not involved in this conflict in a major way. There has not been a solid announcement that the UK will be joining anyone for war in Iran. So currently, people that are in the UK are not in any danger. We are not really involved. So I'm not gonna sit there and drag it all back to me and be like, what about me and my feelings and my anxieties? Do I have anxieties? Hell yes, I do. I hate the idea of this escalating to a war. I do not want to see more war. I do not want to see more people being displaced. Absolutely not. But currently, I have no power over any of this. I can write to my MP. I can write to the Prime Minister. As long as I do it quickly, I can probably write to the European Union. I don't have an address for NATO, but I'll see what I can find on Google. And I can donate to causes to help people that will probably be affected in the event that this does become a war. And I can amplify the voices of people who are there and have stories and are experiencing this. I can't do anything else. And frankly, it would be irresponsible to pretend that I can. And to pretend that I know as much about this as the people there in Iran living this. And who will live this in the future if it does come to war. Because you know what? War or no war, again, just like during Iraq, things won't be the same. But the differences will be starkly different for me and for them. And for me to pretend like we will be living the same experience as insulting to what they will potentially go through. And that's not what I'm about, son. That's not what I'm about. So, yeah, I'm probably gonna still keep talking about, you know, rural bus services and preserving the Welsh language and the continued collapse of Scottish Labour and things like that, because those are the things I know about, and those are the things that I can talk about without making a twat of myself, because I actually know what I'm saying for the most part. But maybe a war is about to kick off, maybe it's not. I'm not going to speak over the people it actually involves. And I feel okay about that. And I kind of wish some people would maybe consider that too. Because social media has changed the way we have conversations and the way that information and news spreads. And there is a very dangerous risk that incorrect information... In fact, it's not a risk, it's happening. I've seen it today on the timeline.
incorrect information is being spread around faster than it can be debunked, and that is the last thing anyone involved in this situation, which might I add, most British people are not at this point in time, it's the last thing they need. So I feel like it's okay not to be an expert. You just have to be honest about it. Good morning, starlight. I'm awake, encased in your embrace. My beauty is stained with blood, resting on your chest, a tapestry of scratches I'm proud to have sewn. It has been 6 hours since we saw our subject. I purr your name, an eager kitten, sleepily, softly padding after you to the car to see our latest adventure. And the frightened, febrile flesh. Yes. He sleeps so sweetly. Glassy eyes gaze. Burning a hole through the map of hair and splatter stains that tell a story on the carpet of your car. Gold and red go so well underneath the morning sun that illuminates what we did when the moon came to visit. Cold air eats away at us. And I lie playful in his tomb as you wrestle with your guilt and his corpse in the low, lazy grass. Chainsaw changing the scene as I dream of tonight's adventure. Moonlight, music, murder. The couple that slays together stays together, right? I don't know how to say this without earning a place on a police watch list or something. It kind of came from a conversation I had about kind of mutual murderous adventures, and so, God. So I was like, oh, let me write about that. That could be cute, right? Can I make, like, serial killing cute? I don't know. Let me try. Because these are the things I do, you know? I just... if I can make it cute, I will. That's my mission in life. Make everything as cute as possible. Murder... can it be cute? Let's find out. But also kind of that whole kind of Bonnie and Clyde codependent, we both did something bad, so we're in it together kind of thing. And not always in a literal sense, because sometimes two people can be bonded together because of, you know, the hardships in life and the things that have been painful and difficult. And then they find a way to deal with that together. Sometimes it's murder, obviously. But sometimes it's not murder. Sometimes, you know, you find a way to heal one another in a healthy way that does not involve killing anyone and then hiding corpses all over places. And that's good. And we encourage that here on the show. But, I mean, maybe you got a murder. I don't know. I don't know your life. Please don't murder anyone. I have never murdered anyone, and I really want to make that clear. I don't actually know if you can dispose of a body with a chainsaw. I don't know, because I've never killed anyone. And I really want to make that clear. I was going to say an ice pick. But I felt like it didn't fit with the image of the poem, because I watched as did everyone apparently. Don't Fuck with Cats on Netflix. It was really weird actually, because I remember a couple of years ago I was like obsessed with the Luca Magnotta thing. Like, I was obsessed, because the long and short of it is I accidentally watched the video because someone sent it to me and they told me to just click it and they didn't tell me what it was. And then suddenly I'm like, what the fucking hell is going on? Why is he doing that? What's happening? And I needed to know what the hell happened. I needed to know what the tea was. Was this man in jail? What the fuck happened? And so I became like obsessed with the case for a couple of weeks, and I was reading about it all the time and watching videos, you know, back on YouTube when it was a very primitive website and it wasn't like a huge ad machine and it was very old fashioned and things, and people would, you know, it was very kind of back to basics, you know, just a person talking at the camera, filmed through a webcam, looking a bit dodgy. But anyway, so it was funny actually to see that it was now this documentary, and seeing just like a whole new generation of people becoming obsessed with this whole situation. And so when I was thinking, okay, I'm writing about this person, this guy getting rid of this body, how's he going to do it? And my head just kept going, ice pick, ice pick, ice pick. And I was like, oh my God, no. Firstly, unfortunately for you, you have seen that it isn't very efficient. You know this. I wish you hadn't seen it, but there we are. Secondly, ice pick gold, really? No. So I had to come up with something else. And so I just went, chainsaw, fuck it, chainsaw. Chainsaw the body up. I mean, realistically, if I was going to do a murder with someone that I loved and I didn't want to get caught, I probably wouldn't advise them to use a chainsaw, because that's going to attract a lot of noise and attention. And not that I'm planning anything, I promise, but so that's how the chainsaw links in. What would I use? Acid? That's a popular thing, isn't it? People do that. I don't know. I'm not a seasoned serial killer. I don't know. I'm like still a baby at these things. I don't know.
Pre-order the new album, Poetry Collection, Deus Ex Machina, by Jennifer Wahl, at jenniferwahl.com.
And that brings us to the end of the episode, but we'll be back next week. If you want to find more of my work before then, you can on my website, jenniferwahl.com. You can also follow me on social media with the username MissJSquared on pretty much all the places, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and so on and so forth. Thank you to my top tier Patreon subscribers, Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, Eleanor, Alicia, Emily, Andy, and Tyler. If you want to support this show and other projects that I do, you can through Patreon for $1 a month and up, where you get lots of exclusive content and free stuff and early release stuff and fun things like that. All the details about that are in the description or on my website, and I will see you next week. Good night, my love.